This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing podcast.
Don't sweat the technique.
Welcome to the Lookout Landing podcast. We are back with another very special episode of our Why I'm a Mariners Fan series. And today, on the other end, we have a award-winning comic artist and a designer who currently has a Marvel art exhibit at the freaking Smithsonian in New York City. Also a big-time Mariners fan. Please welcome Jeffrey Varaghy to the show. Jeffrey, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? Thank you for having me.
Of course. This is a pleasure. We are trying to get as many different sort of perspectives and backgrounds and different lenses into the Mariners. So we're very excited to add you to the mix, and we're glad that we could make some time to chat with you for a little bit.
I'm so excited to be anytime talk baseball is a good time to talk.
That's what I'm saying, especially in the middle of the winter where it feels like it's so far away and, you know, baseball feels like such a distant thing now. But to be able to talk about it or at least think about it a little bit helps sort of bridge that gap until spring training.
Oh, definitely. It seems like after the World Series, I get my evenings back, but I don't know what to do with them because they're spent watching the Mariners and then, you know, the playoffs. So it's me and my wife both struggle to try to figure out what are we going to do tonight.
Yeah, maybe you should start a podcast. That's helped me fill a lot of time this winter. If you need something to feel really self-important and talk to people in a way that's kind of, in a way, like a thing for you that's also for everyone, I would totally recommend starting a podcast.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like fun, man, but I'll leave that to the pros.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much. I don't know if pro is the right word, but I'll take that as a huge compliment coming from you. So, Jeffrey, let's just start at the only logical place to begin this conversation, which is at the beginning. How did you originally become infected by Mariner-osis, if you will? Was this something through your parents, or did you become a fan sort of organically? What are your first memories? When did you know that you were hooked? I want to know everything from the earliest point you can remember.
Well, I remember one of my first baseball caps was a Mariners cap that my parents got for me, the old Trident, and I still love that design. That was back in the early 80s, late 70s, and, you know, just been a fan of baseball for, I would say, most of my life. I think it really took off in the teen years. Growing up on a reservation, baseball is a religion. I always say there's like five religions on my reservation. There's the typical, you got the Christian faith, but then you have pro wrestling, Elvis, baseball, and the Seahawks. So it's just part of who we are. Baseball tournaments all summer long, starting in May and ends through Labor Day weekend, and you travel all over the state with your cousins and your brother, your family, just to play baseball against other tribes. The Mariners, however, I wasn't always a big Mariner fan. If I'm going to be honest, I'm a comic book artist, and I was going to a con, and I thought, you know, I want people to know where I'm from, and I'm going to get me a Mariners hat. And the more I thought about it, I thought, you know, I should be rooting more for them. They are my home team. I'm proud of where I'm from, and I want them to represent them and them represent me. So it wasn't until that epiphany. My wife, however, she's been a Mariners fan since the 80s. She's was a big Griffey fan. We started dating. Her room was littered with Griffey posters from all in the early days. This was like 90, 92.
Interesting. So can you, for the listeners maybe who don't know your background, can you explain the reservation you grew up in, what part of the world that was, sort of how that sort of came up? As I mean, you mentioned that there's the Mariners are a big thing, the Seahawks are a big thing, Elvis, which is something I didn't know, but what is sort of the baseball culture on the reservation like?
Oh man, it is okay. So my tribe is the Port Gamble Sklallam tribe. We're in Kingston, Washington. So for those who don't know where Kingston is, it's a half-hour ferry ride from Edmonds. The reservation itself, it isn't entirely big, but most of the families is pretty athletic. It's basketball in the spring and the summer, or no, basketball in the fall, winter, baseball in spring and summer. We had guys who played football, but football was never a big a thing. My cousins, when they were younger, they were a lot better ball players than me. A lot of state championship teams, little league championship teams, native national championship teams. They were all much better athletes than I was, and which is why I'm a comic book artist today.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. I had a very similar experience where I also grew up playing baseball and doing a little bit of the travel tournament circuit and all-star teams. And then once puberty hit and you realize that some kids could actually now throw the ball hard and hit it a lot farther than you, that's when I was like, I wonder if I could maybe think about the game and write about it in a way that sort of gives me that same fix, but I don't have to worry about getting pegged with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's a great way to go about it. I rode pine a lot of the games. I had, I'd get in there or late games when we generally were never losing, so we were always winning. So I'd get to go in there when it was a landslide and get at least maybe one at bat and get to field for a couple innings or a couple half innings. But I never, it was a team camaraderie, just being there with my cousins and my friends and just being a part of something. Just you all spoke the same language. And it was it's a passion. It's not just playing the game, but just knowing the history and the lore that goes into this, that who played before and the legacies that they set.
Yeah, so something I'm always interested in when I talk to people for this podcast series is, would you say in the early days, were you a Mariners fan first or a baseball fan first? Like, which one was sort of the origin of your fandom?
Baseball, totally, was the thing. I really started queuing into the baseball around 88, 89 with the A's, when you had the Bash Brothers. You had Jose Canseco, and I think every kid I knew loved Jose Canseco. This was 40-40 club era. You had Mark McGwire. You had the A's were dynamite. You had Ricky Henderson, who I still love, Ricky Henderson. Dave Stewart, Bob Welch, Mike Moore. I mean, him going down to the Oakland and just that change of venue, what that did to his game. I mean, he was already a pretty good strikeout artist, but his game definitely went up a notch there under was Tim Duncan. Wasn't he the pitching coach then?
You are asking the wrong person. I was not following the late 80s Oakland days very closely.
Oh, yeah. So it just was that, and then grew into baseball cards and just reading stats over and over. I used to love getting packs, and my favorite thing to do was to try to make up a starting lineup of the players that you had.
Yeah, I think that I had that for sure. I think that baseball cards, and I don't know this to be a fact. I guess you mentioned before we started that you have a son, so I guess I could ask you through him. Is it still a thing for kids to be collecting baseball cards, or is it sort of like, I imagine there's ways to do this virtually probably that I'm not aware of, but like, does your son have the same interest in baseball as a whole, or baseball cards more specifically?
Yeah, my boys, they're not into baseball as much as I am. They like it. They appreciate it. They certainly love playing wiffle ball with their old man when in the summer times, but they weren't into it as much. My nephew, he collects baseball cards, but he's not too heavy duty into it. That's one thing I love about being an adult and having eBay is you can get all these rookie cards that you wanted growing up that, like, oh, man, I want a Carlton Fisk rookie. Get a Carlton Fisk rookie. You can get pretty reasonable. It's a good thing and a bad thing because you see all these guys that are Hall of Famers that have such amazing achievements on the diamond, and they just don't have the value that some cards, the newer cards, do.
Right. But there's definitely something too to like the tangible thing you can hold in your hand. Like for me, baseball cards and reading box scores in the sports section were like really, I think if I didn't have those, I don't know if my baseball fervor would have been where it was. And obviously it helped for me that the Mariners were just on every day. Like growing up in a place where the local, sports station had the Mariners, that was huge. But like learning about other teams and, like people like Ricky Henderson, like you said, like having the baseball card that shows not only his stats, but like how cool he was in the picture. That was enormous for me.
Oh, huge. Remember the Bo Jackson one? The two sport Bo Jackson score did it. It was for the 1990 set. And it was a football baseball. It was a black and white. That was such a cool baseball card. Bo Jackson, he was incredible.
Right. And I worry that now, like, baseball players are cool now in such a different way. Like, they almost feel like they've all had their personality sucked out of them, and they're just like, they speak with their play, which is pretty cool. I mean, like,
yeah.
I love bat flips and all of the on-field celebrations, but it doesn't seem like they have the same sort of cultural impact as someone like the Bash Brothers, who, I mean, did you see the Netflix thing that they made with
Man, that was so funny. Right. Those guys, I love Lonely Island. Yeah, that was pretty good. Well, I always wondered what Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco thought about that.
Yeah, and that just speaks too to how big of a thing they were. Like, that was 30 years ago when they were in their primes, and like, you can still make something today that like people understand and know. I don't know if you'll be able to do that with, like, I don't know, I'm just thinking, like, maybe, like, Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve. I don't think they have the national sort of clout that the Bash Brothers did. Not even close, if we're being honest.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. There's players you definitely see that have that kind of magic, that transcendence. But you see somebody like Mike Trout. That guy is the greatest hitter I've ever seen in the majors that I've got to see live. He tears the Mariners up, seems like, every time we see him. And it's kind of a bittersweet, because I love seeing such a great player and do what he's known best for, but it sucks because you're doing it against your club.
Oh, yeah. My biggest wish is for Mike Trout to go to the National League so I can just fully support him with my entire heart, because he is the best. I think
yeah.
We're never going to see someone who can do what he does on both sides of the ball. Like, his hitting is, you could argue that there's been hitters as good as him, but there's never been someone who can hit like him and play a premium position like him.
Yeah, but you just don't see the players crossing over. I think the last big name that you think about, really, goes TV appearances and things like that, is Ken Griffey Jr. I feel like he was the last one that we had that was that kind of name recognition out off the field, that, say, like Bo Jackson and them do that. Mike Trout and players like him don't. And definitely Altuve and them, they're great. They're great to watch. I'm concerned how much did we see was as a result of the cheating scandal that we're all hearing about. But I just don't see that.
Yeah, I think maybe Derek Jeter might have been close.
Jeter, totally. Yeah.
But yeah, you're totally right, though, about the thing where, like, baseball players, they don't have maybe, like, the... I guess it's part of the new wave of baseball itself, where no one really seems to care about being a superstar. I think that is definitely part of it. Like, Mike Trout, if he had his druthers, would probably not do media at all. And that's totally fine. That's his prerogative. But it doesn't help, you know, the sport of baseball the way that Ken Griffey wearing the backwards hat or Derek Jeter hosting SNL did. So I've been waiting for a while for a player to come up who at least tries, like, who at least wants to take that torch and be like, you know what, I'm pretty good at baseball, but I also would like to, you know, be on camera and, you know, have movie cameos or whatever, or have my own signature shoe. Like, I think that would be massive for baseball.
And you think somebody like Bryce Harper, he might step up and can fill that role possibly. I mean, he's definitely had moments where you thought, yeah, he could be that guy. Juan Soto definitely during the playoffs really showed he had that kind of magic.
Yes, oh my gosh, absolutely. And I think that's, for a lot of Mariner fans, it's hard not to look at Juan Soto and think that our minor league crop right now can, you know, do something similar. Obviously, the World Series is very, very aspirational, but it's not hard to think, oh, you know, Julio Rodriguez, similar profile, about the same age, same personality, like, you know, it's good to at least have dreams, because for a while we had just nothing going in the minor leagues.
That Arkansas team, I wish I could have went to some of those games to watch them play this last summer. I bet you they were the talent. That's why I really like having the Rainiers in Tacoma, because we can now have that ability to go see these guys play in minor league ball and in the majors and watch them come up and just do the team right. City right.
It's totally like what we have to do right now too during the rebuild, is kind of reframe everything in terms of the future, which is fine, but it's, you know, it's an exercise in patience for sure.
Oh yeah, and we had, you know, glimmers. Crawford, he looked really good last season. He had some stellar moments. Kyle Lewis, he's one of those guys I think has that magic. He just felt like when he's up at the plate, there's something could happen, something great that you're gonna see.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
And just thinking about Julio Rodriguez, Evan White, I can't wait to see him. And now, is he coming up this year, or is he getting invited, or is this how, what I that deal? Everybody keeps saying that he might be up. But yeah. The fact that they traded Navarez today, maybe that's making room for him the roster.
The organization seems to be hinting at the fact that it's Evan White's job to lose at first base. So he'll definitely be in Major League spring training. And as long as that's not a complete disaster, I think we will see him starting at first base on opening day. Because I'm now really the thing is also there's him. No one else who
and,
could
and
play.
And Hanny being healthy again to see him out there in the outfield. I think we got some great guys. I you know, Seager was looking awesome there towards the end after he started warming up and doing. He lost some weight there. He's not playing hurt. I really would like to see him continue to have that coming into the next season.
Yeah, before we get into the current stuff, I do want to sort of circle back to your early days following the Mariners, because you mentioned it was like 88, 89, you said, was your estimate for like when you started to really follow and care about the Mariners. So I'm curious.
Baseball in general, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm and curious back then, in the Kingdome days, and those were some great games to go to. The tickets were always cheap. And then my tribe, they used to always give my tribe free tickets. It was all the nosebleed seats, but still you got to go watch some good ball play there. You got to see Scott Bankhead. You got to see Eric Hansen in his prime, well, his one good season. you got to see Junior come up. You got to see some of the old Dave Valley when, you know, it was Harold Reynolds. It was AD and even the Hackman.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I was curious if your like earliest Mariner memories were pre-Griffey, and then the next logical question is, well, then who was there to latch onto? But you just listed like five or six.
Yeah,
names.
I love Mark Langston. Mark Langston's actually still my favorite all-time Mariner.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I just loved Mark. I really, him seeing that game against the A's that year in the championship was a hard one to see for him, because you want the Mariners one, but you also wanted to see him succeed. I always thought that he should have listened to Don Mattingly. They would have had a ring by then. New York would have won if he'd have went to New York.
So what was it about Mark Langston? Like, as a kid, what did you think, like, what do you think drew you to him in hindsight? Just the fact that he was the best pitcher on the team, or is there something more than that?
Just the best pitcher on the team, and he just had that cool factor about him, you know? He didn't, they show that scene of him moonwalking. He gets embarrassed, but that's when the moonwalk was cool, you know, and it's still a cool design. It's still a cool dance. But he just had that factor, you know, the it factor that drew me to as a player. And, you know, no, I can't imagine anybody not loving Alvin Davis when he was there too. I mean, he was, and Harold Reynolds was awesome.
Yeah, it's so
That's
funny.
Why when
too.
He went to Baltimore, that you know, that was a sad day. I always thought
it's funny how like the Mariners as a specific entity sort of make you love the guys who aren't necessarily great. Like you, I mean, Alvin Davis was good. You know, Harold Reynolds is very good, but we don't have like, you know, there's not like the Yankees or the Cardinals or whatever where you have like true legends of the game on your team at every point. Like you really have to like figure out a way to still enjoy baseball and enjoy your team without having Hall of Famers at three different positions.
Yeah, you know, I always wonder about what would have happened if Griffey and Randy would have stayed with us. How would that have changed the dynamic of baseball here in Seattle?
I know, it's very hard not to get into what ifs with the Mariners because that's kind of all we have now. We don't have the like the comfort of like, well, at least we have the one ring. It's like, well, what if, you know, this had broken this way or this had gone that way, or, you know, if they make one deal at the deadline in 2001 or whatever it is. Like, it's so funny to sort of think about all of the ways that the Mariners have sort of recalibrated your brain to sort of deal with hypotheticals rather than the actual things that have happened. Because when you get too deep into the things that have happened, it just leads to you being sad, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I know people, I have friends that are, you know, they're just saddened because this rebuild year was tough for a lot of fans, I believe. It wasn't easy, but, you know, you try to find something good. You know what's coming out of this. You know that they're starting over, that it's a chance to see build. I kind of like the idea of it because it felt like we were starting from scratch a little bit. We just kept a few key ingredients and went from there.
Yeah, but I do know people that
they felt like they've been betrayed too many seasons, especially to go after a 90-plus win season to go the direction that we headed there.
Right. So how much of the 2019 season did you consume? Because you mentioned that like it was kind of a logical splintering point where you have 2018, it's a really fun team that's competitive, and then they get rid of basically the whole roster. So I think, like you said, for a lot of fans, it was like a season to kind of just check out. Were you still like following the team pretty closely, watching nine innings every night, or what was?
Yeah,
your
I bet you we missed maybe a handful of games, if that. We were pretty loyal watching. Went to four or five games this last season. We were still devoted to watching the boys play. It's the home team, and you're always going to root for them. I wasn't as disappointed because, I mean, I didn't expect them to win. I thought they'd win 73 games, 72 games is what I kind of expected, and they came close to that. Was it championship-level play? No, but we had some great games. We had some great at-bats. We got glimmers of the future, which that's what excited me, was you could see it. You're starting to see that at the end there, I believe.
Well, yeah, and that idea you're talking about of the, like, you can see it, you can feel it, like, you know that something is happening, that's sort of how I felt about 2018, where they were so competitive and even in first place at certain points, where you're like, I can imagine, and there were certain weekend games, too, where you can, you know, look at, if you're in the stadium, you can feel it, if you're watching at home, you can see it and go, this is what a playoff game would look like, and then it, obviously, the bottom fell out of it, but, like, I remember saying out loud multiple times last season or 2018, whatever, to people, like, yeah, they're gonna do it. Like, I was trying to do the, like, speak it into existence sort of thing. I'm not really big on jinxes or anything like that. So I was telling myself basically until August, like, yeah, they're gonna do it. They're gonna make the playoffs. Like, they'll at least get a wild card game, and then who knows what'll happen. And I think that for that to sort of fail so spectacularly, I mean, the end of 2018 was pretty dark.
Yeah, it was bad.
And for it to go down like that, like, that's why I don't hold any resentment for people who were like, yeah, I took 2019 off, because I think that's a healthy thing to do. And, like, obviously being super loyal is, you know, another way people do fandom, and I think that works for people, and that's another healthy way to do it if you're doing it right. But I don't think that there's, like, any shame in sort of being like, yeah, you know, the circumstances surrounding this team have made me very sad, and I'm choosing to detach for a little bit. How do you feel? Yeah. What are your thoughts? I'm sure you've interacted with people who have told you that they've sort of taken a step back or, you know, turned the season off completely.
Yeah, there's people who've turned – they haven't turned the season off completely. They're like I said, most of my friends, my cousins, we still talk, watch baseball, my uncles. I think we're all in the same place. I think that we – especially beginning of last season when you thought, oh, these guys, maybe they are defying the – maybe they can defy the odds with this lineup. And and then the end of this 2018, I don't think anybody was totally ready to walk away, but you definitely start arguing, well, what was this move? What did this move bring us, sort of thing? You know, we get into a lot of good debates about that, who we should be trading for, who we shouldn't be trading for, who we can trade away.
Yeah, and I remember when we got Span and Colomé, I was like, this is a perfect move. This is the opposite of what the Mariners have been doing for so long, where the move they make backfires. Like, they were the perfect role players that we needed, and they were contributing in big moments. And that's what led me to think, like, okay, this feels like a playoff roster, because now it's not only the superstars, it's the, you know, it's the 9th, 10th, and 11th guy, and, you know, the setup men who are all in a solid position to help them break through. And then obviously when it doesn't happen, that's when you start to sort of reconsider and be like, well, what if, you know, what if they did this or what if they did that? And then the big one is like, well, what if they had just started to rebuild a little sooner, you know? So there's a lot of ways to sort of get in your own head when following the Mariners, as I'm sure you can know very well.
And I think, you know, D. Gordon, he was such an amazing part of that first half, that he carried such energy, and he does carry such energy on the field. He's always a pleasure to watch, and he's one that I hope, you know, I understand they need to trade him, but he's not one that I'd like to see go away anytime soon, because I think that a lot of the younger players could definitely benefit from that spirit and energy that he brings to the clubhouse.
Oh, yeah, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, I know that it's, you know, not smart analytic baseball to talk about, you know, the the clubhouse guy or the vibes or whatever it is. But I think that is extremely important, especially when, like last year, you know, the whole thing was like, it doesn't really matter if we're winning or losing. It's about building something. And Dee Gordon is the perfect guy for that, especially when you look around and realize how many black players they had in the clubhouse. Like, that doesn't mean nothing. You know what I mean? Like, there's people who are going to scoff at that and say, oh, you know, like, you know, baseball is baseball. But for some of these kids, especially, you know, there were, we had, I think, three or four Southern black guys on the team last year. And that's exactly what Dee Gordon is. And he's been doing it for like 8 or 9 years in the big leagues. Like, I do think that there's a lot of value in just having someone to show you the ropes. I mean, it's the same thing at any real job, and like in an office or something. If you have someone who looks like you, talks like you, is similar to you, you're going to gravitate towards them. And that can, you know, speak volumes for your work. So
good work habits. It's all, you know, they're all so impressionable, and you want that. You want somebody like that in there. And, you know, that's how, you know, I felt like the Dodgers were with Chase Utley. I'm a big Chase Utley fan. I know some people really don't like him for his, for that play against in the Mets playoffs, but I think that he was one of those kind of players also that you just, you need somebody in there to ignite, but you also need somebody in there to cool down, who knows how to cool down, who's been there and experienced it and can share that and understands probably just the hardest players, but the soft players as well that need that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think, I mean, one of the real tragedies of recent Mariner history is obviously that they couldn't do anything to help Felix get to the playoffs. They obviously tried and tried and tried, but part of me then also, because now, you know, once the final game happened last year, you start to think about Felix in the past tense, which is sad, but it's kind of what we have to do now. And I did think at one point, like, I wonder if Felix just didn't maybe have or want to be that clubhouse guy and like really be a culture person. And I'm not trying to put blame on anyone. It's just sort of a natural thought experiment because that's one of those things that, like, as fans, we have no idea what's happening, you know, behind closed doors. And you start to wonder, like, is Felix a guy who will, you know, be one of those vocal leaders? Is he a rah-rah guy, or is he like just someone who, you know, will go out and pitch 8 shutout innings and look at the young guys and be like, that's how you do it? And, you know, and you have to wonder, does that work for everyone? Like, did Michael Pineda, you know, jive with that or whatever? Like, I don't know if you have thought about this or if you want to weigh in, but I just remember thinking when we were watching the last Felix game, which I was in the stadium for, like, man, I wonder what just didn't click for this franchise or with him that stopped them from fully achieving their potential.
Especially when they brought out the commercials there, and highlights, you think about all that he achieved, all that he'd done for the team, and to not win a championship is tragic. It's just a tragic. He really struggled here the last few seasons, and, you know, I would get upset with him, and I'd get upset with Service if he who I thought was maybe misplaying him. But you have to remember, he could have took a pay cut, I think, and he could have went to New York years ago, and he signed with us. He signed this long-term deal commitment, and that's what I always respected, was that he honored that commitment, and the Mariners did.
Right. I certainly...
Same thing with, like, people like Edgar. You just don't see that kind of loyalty as much these days, and I like that. I like seeing players stay with the same teams. I'm not one that likes seeing a bunch of trades. That's why when we get these guys, you get Haniger, and I love Haniger. He's a great player. I think he's a five-tool guy. I think he's got MVP caliber here in the next 3 to 4 seasons. He's amazing. But then you start seeing people, these headlines saying, oh, here's some trades for Haniger, or this is what we should get for Haniger. This is something. It's like, why? Give the guy a chance to play and just let him stay in Seattle and be great for Seattle.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I think that the main thing you're talking about, I totally agree with, where, like, I have no ill will towards anyone who chooses to stay with one team, even if it does sort of prevent them. Like, Felix, like you said, could have easily, that season when the offseason before he signed the long extension, he could have just sort of zoomed out and been like, well, if I go to this team, we are absolutely making the playoffs. Like, that's a layup, and then done that. But he didn't. He chose to stay here and try to build something. And obviously, you know, it didn't work, but that doesn't mean that Felix was wrong necessarily. Like, it means that he made the decision that he wanted to. And, you know, in life, sometimes things don't work out. But I do think that the thing you mentioned about Mitch Haniger, I think that, like, obviously a lot of it is tied to bad luck. I mean, it's not anyone's fault that he fouled the ball off his testicles, but there is some, once that happened, I think it was very easy, like you said, for people to go, oh, well, now his value is going to tank. We could have traded him when we had a chance. And I think that that is one of those things that's just sort of very inherent to being a sports fan, is always trying to play armchair GM and say, oh, you know, we could have traded him here when his, like, after the 2018 season, his breakout, it would have been, I mean, it makes baseball sense to look at that and you're already rebuilding and say, oh, we could see what we could get for him. But I totally, like, I have sort of a still, like, sentimental, romantic view of baseball, where I want the guys that I love, which Mitch Haniger is one of those guys, to be on the next playoff team. And the same thing goes for D. Gordon, although I don't think that one has really any chance of happening. But, like, I do, I'm the sort of Mariners fan and sports fan at large where I do get attached to players, as foolish as it is. And I want to pose this as a question to you, because it's very common, I guess, for Mariners fans, is when guys leave the Mariners and then go on to greater success or play in the playoffs, are you still wholeheartedly rooting for them, or are you the guy who's like, oh my god, like, I can't do this, it's like watching an ex date someone else? Where do you stand on, like, James Paxton pitching in Yankee Stadium in the playoffs and stuff like that?
I was rooting for him. It depends on how they leave, I get, is for me, but for the most part, when you see him in the playoffs, it's, you know, I find myself rooting for them. I don't want them to be the goat. Seeing who was our left fielder for the Brewers?
Ben Gamel?
Yeah, when you seen Gamel, I didn't want him to be the last out or anything like that.
Oh, against, right, yeah. Against the Nats.
Yeah, but for the most part, I find myself rooting for him. There's certain players, definitely, like Paxton. I loved Paxton when he was here. It was really hard seeing him Yankee in pinstripes. But I wish him, I hope he continues to do well for them. You know, and I hope for, like, as far as, like, Felix goes, that if we do make the playoffs in the next couple seasons, that there's a way that we can bring him on that roster to get him the ring that he deserves.
Oh, man, yeah, I've never even really thought about it like that. But, yeah, if you just do, like, the August trade to just bring Felix back and have him, you know, be a one-inning guy out of the bullpen, I think that's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, and give him that opportunity to be a part of that. That's what I'm hoping for, the best-case scenario.
Yeah, okay, so what are you most, I guess, excited about right now with the Mariners? We've mentioned you love Mitch Haniger, but I'm curious about sort of the younger guys, the new wave, if you will. You know, it can be either, I guess, here, let me ask you this first. Of the young guys that we saw last year come up to the majors, which one do you think is, like, is your guy? Which one do you find yourself really, like, latching onto the most?
Kyle Lewis. I think that he showed everybody that he is what he was in the minors, that he's lived up to that potential, and he showed it. You know, he set a home run record. He was absolutely amazing, and he carried himself with great presence on the field. Off, you know, you could see him during the games how he carried. You know, I just love and respect that. JP Crawford, he's another one that I'm looking forward to seeing next year, a full season, and seeing what he's capable of, the numbers that he could put up. And his defense has gotten so much better. Marco, I love Marco. I like seeing him. Kikuchi, I'd really like to see more of him. To see, there was games where that he was absolutely brilliant, and then there's others that, you know, he's still learning the league.
Yeah, and I think that's to be expected with young players. I think one of the more foolish things you can do as a baseball fan is expect everyone to come up and be what Kyle Lewis was last year, where he's just, like, immediately setting the league on fire. Like, that's just not realistic. And especially with, you know, all of the failed prospects that we've had, which leads me to my next question for you, is, like, when you have someone who has so much hope and potential, like, you know, an Ackley or even, like, a Danny Holson who never made the big leagues. Like, what does that do for your fandom, especially as, you know, a fan of the Seattle Mariners specifically? Does that make you start to question the organization, or, you know, start to think about curses and all that? Like, what does it do to your psyche seeing the Mariners try their hardest and continue to fail for 18 years?
That's kind of a tougher question. I think the players just see great players come up and they show such promise, and then to burn out early on in their careers. It's always sad to see that, but you remember the good games that they gave you, and Ackley is a perfect example of that. Pineda, you know, he was another Tajon Walker. They're all good. I would like to see us pick up Tajon Walker this season, bring him back.
Hell yeah. We've been talking about that amongst the staff, how it just makes a lot of sense to give him a chance.
Oh yeah, totally. And I think it doesn't, for me, what tests me as a fan is the maybe lack of hustle.
Okay.
The lack of hustle or emotion. Maybe there's not enough emotion at times. Sometimes it, you know, but you don't see it all the time, but you start seeing around August, you know, guys are getting tired. You know that, you know, they've been on the road. They know they see the standings, and you wonder how much is it now? Is it just in automatic mode? Cause everybody does it in every job. You do that. So baseball to me wouldn't be any different.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily test my patience or it tests my wife's patience pretty good. It's funny because our dogs, they won't come into the room during ball times. And mainly it's for my wife. She's a huge, huge fan.
Really?
And,
so, can I interrupt real quick? I want to know, how has that changed your fandom, having someone so close to you also be so into it? Because I know for me personally, like, I'm pretty into the Mariners, obviously. Like, I think about them, talk about them, write about them a lot. But it's very refreshing, I think, when I meet someone who doesn't care at all about them, because then I can sort of turn that part of my brain off. So I'm curious what it's like to have it be the other way, where, you know, your wife, person that maybe knows you better than anyone else, is also on that same wavelength, where it's like, all I want to do is watch the Mariners and talk about the Mariners and think about the Mariners. Was it just like two stars colliding sort of situation, or how did that come about?
Oh yeah, my wife, she understands me on so many levels, but the baseball part is the one thing that that's our thing together. It's you know, it's why we go to the games together. It's our time. It's who we are. It's part of who we are, and it's fun. It's my best friend. I get to go to games and watch games with my best friend. We don't always agree on calls. We don't always agree on certain players. I like Verlander. I think Verlander is an amazing pitcher. I liked him in Detroit. I still like him in Houston, even though I don't like rooting for him when we're playing against him. But she absolutely, no. How can you root for him? That's like me rooting for Tom Brady. She just, it's just as bad in her eyes.
I've never really thought about the Justin Verlander, Tom Brady comparison, but it definitely is there. I think she's onto something with their, you know, they have very similar, I would say, demeanors and person. I mean, both married to supermodels, both very, very, very successful at their job, but also very grating. Like, I'm going to have to store that one away for later use, maybe, with credit to your wife, obviously, but
yeah,
it's pretty good.
And that's the thing. That's the magic of baseball, I think. No matter who you are, no matter where you're from, if you're a baseball fan, you can start talking, and everybody has their favorites. Everybody knows stats. There's comparisons. There's always that thing. There's friends that we don't get along and see eye to eye on anything, but baseball is the one thing that we can talk about and not get offended. We might get upset with certain trades or certain comments we might leave on each other's posts, but It's the one thing that I think that is, it doesn't matter who you are. It's one of the, that's what I love about it.
So let me ask you this. It's one of my favorite questions to ask Mariners fans. Which team do you hate the most? Because I think when the Mariners have been so lifeless, it's hard to have like a real rival because everyone is just beating up on us. So which team do you have the most hatred for?
Oh, the Astros. Okay. I really, really have a distaste for the Astros. Now they got some great guys, some great talent. I love Greinke. I really liked him. I like Verlander. Cole was amazing to watch. It's the swagger. It's all of it. And then you see the new allegations, and it just fuels that flame even more. and it's frustrating. It's frustrating to see that you know we're going to get there someday, but you want it sooner.
Yeah, I think for me,
and I'm not a general fan of the Rangers either. It might just be those types of players. Although the Rangers have some guys that just maybe it's just because they have certain players that you know if they're in the lineup, they're gonna go yard on it.
Yeah. No, I think that's I completely agree with everything you're saying. I do think that the Astros have become almost the new Yankees in that sense where they're better than you. They know they're better than you. All their players are, you know, liable to do something amazing. They all have giant salaries, and they, like, you know, maybe are like evil is a word you could use to describe both of them. And especially now, the cheating thing.
They,
like,
totally
said.
The Yankees. I mean, everybody always talks about them being even better than the Bronx Bombers, the original Murderers Row. You know, I don't know about that. You know, we'll wait and see. Yeah, let time be the test for that. But they are. They're totally the new villains.
Yeah, for me,
everybody, during the World Series, I only knew a few people that were rooting for the Astros. And you look at their lineup and you think, how can these guys not win with that pitching to that lineup? I would not want to pitch. There would be no rest. You would get no moment to pause.
Right. For me, I think that the team that I will always hate the most, just because of my, when I was a kid, the Angels were the team that was just always just kicking the shit out of the Mariners. And they were doing it in a way that was, like, very professional. Like, during the Socha years, the Angels were kind of the opposite of what we were just saying about the Astros, where, like, they were very unassuming. They had a lot of just, like, solid dudes, like Garrett Anderson, Troy Gloss. All those guys were just so annoyingly good. John Lackey, same thing. And, like,
John Lackey was a great pitcher. I see. I liked the Angels back then. I was
because of the, like,
I liked Darren
thing.
Erstad. Yeah. Jim Edmonds was awesome. Tim Salmon. You know, when they got that, when they won that championship with Tim Salmon, it was good to see him get a ring for the years that he played. All the years he played there with the Angels.
Uh-huh.
You know, when they went and got Hamilton, you thought, oh man, they're good. You get Hamilton, they got Pujols, and yeah, they've had good. Garrett Anderson, he was awesome. And whatever happened to Garrett Anderson?
I think he just aged. I'm pretty sure he just, you know, he had a decent career and then I think just retired. Like, I think it was very Garrett Anderson in that way where he just, you know, he came, he saw, and he left, and he did his thing, and he didn't really make a scene. But I totally know what you're saying. Like, if I had been older, I think I would have had more of that, like, respect factor for him. But as a kid who was, like, learning to love baseball and the Mariners, I was like, fuck these guys. All they do is they don't, like, I'm kind of the person, too, where, like, I would rather, if we're going to lose, I would rather the other team at least look like they're having fun. And the Angels were not that. And now it's done kind of my feelings on the Angels have done a 180, where it's like, now I'm mad at them because they can't figure out how to get Mike Trout to the playoffs. And it's like, as much as I do hate the Angels as an institution and want the Mariners to finish ahead of them in the standings every year, I do kind of, like, start to feel myself, you know, like, getting upset, like the way you would with, like, someone who you want to see succeed, but they're doing things to, like, you know, harm that. It's like, why don't you
guys? It's just natural. You want to see, you know that he's a great player. You know he deserves a much bigger platform for people to see and really appreciate how special he truly is. I don't think everybody realizes that, how special Mike Trout is.
Yeah, he's the one who, we were to go back to our original discussion, he's the one who you'd want the rookie card of now. You'd want to have
totally
all of the Mike Trout stuff and all of the memories. Like, I still remember him, one of his most iconic plays that'll go down, like, whenever he goes into the Hall of Fame and they do his little sizzle reel, the one of him robbing Jesus Montero is going to be in there. We're going to have to live down that every single time. And then that's going to lead me to think, man, if only he could have done one of these things in the playoffs. Like, if he could have had the postseason that Juan Soto had last year, we would be talking about Mike Trout as one of the greatest athletes of all time.
Yeah, and Soto was just absolutely amazing. If you weren't in love with that guy as a player before the playoffs, you definitely were afterwards. And that's what I loved about that Nationals team. They just were gritty. They wanted it, and they kept finding ways to win and to beat, defy the odds.
Yeah, I thought, too, when I was watching them, they had a lot of 2001 Mariners to them where, you know, not everyone on the team is an all-star or, you know, is the kind of guy that would make you say, we don't want to face them. But together. Like, they were one of those classic we are better than the sum of our parts team. Like, you have guys like Howie Kendrick and Asdrubal Cabrera and Kurt Suzuki. Like, those are like the Mark McLemore's, you know, or the...
And everybody forgets how good Howie Kendrick used to be. He was a great ball player.
Yeah, that goes back to the Angels.
Younger days with the Angels.
Yeah. But, okay, so then on the Juan Soto conversation, I want to know how much you have invested in Julio Rodriguez. What do you know about Julio? How much are you following him? Because he is, I think, our best opportunity to have a prospect similar to Soto or similar to these guys who come up, Acuna, Aaron Judge, who's come up and immediately take the game by storm.
Well, I do like what he was saying there about being that's going to be us someday during the playoffs.
Yeah.
I love that about him. I like it when you hear players talk like that already. And I love what you hear about that team down there that they were playing. It was, I can't wait to see him up. I don't know, other than just sheer ability, that the guy is something. I just pulled up his stats really quick here, and to see what he was hitting.
Yeah. And to do it at multiple levels too. That's so hard to do when you're a kid.
You keep climbing and where's the threshold? Where is it at, you know? And this is a guy you don't want to see get hurt. You don't want to see him be led astray. You don't want him definitely don't want to play on the 86 Mets. But you just want to continue to see him get nurtured the right way. That you wonder, is he the next? Does he have Griffey potential for the Mariners?
I mean, yeah,
or it's A-Rod. I don't know about A-Rod, but definitely Griffey.
Well, it feels crazy to compare anyone to those guys, especially a 20-year-old. But like, it is sort of the natural. Like, when your mind wanders and you think about, you know, if everything breaks right for the Mariners, he totally is Griffey, A-Rod, Ichiro. Like, all of them kind of rolled into one in a way. Like, he has bits and pieces of all of their games. And the thing that, like, I mean, you've mentioned you love just sort of his personality and the things he said. One of the things that I've heard him say was that one of his, like, tangible goals is whenever he debuts, he wants to break A-Rod's Mariner record for home runs. And I love that. Like, I love wanting to, you know, like, you mentioned this, and we're doing a lot of callbacks, but it's like, I want them to care. I want them to think, like, these are my guys. I am a Seattle Mariner, and it's not just my employer. It's something that I want to see succeed, because it can be very easy, I think, especially for guys of the 2010s who came up to not the best situation with the Mariners, and they're like, oh, well, I guess I'll just play out my rookie contract and, you know, see what happens. Like, no, I want you to think, this is my opportunity to change baseball. He uses the term break baseball all the time. Julio Rodriguez says he wants to break baseball, and to hear that was just so refreshing.
And I don't think we're too far off. I mean, we see a lot of teams that were doing this that are really starting to pay dividends, not just the Astros. You got Minnesota. They start looking Tampa, bring up some guys. We're starting to see this new generation. And I think we're coming in. I think odds in our favor. I think that we're going to live up to this potential that these boys are setting, that they want to win and they want to be the guys – who does it? Why wouldn't you want to give them the ball, give them the at bat? That's going to be, it's going to make these seasons, the real tough games, even sweeter.
Yeah, and this is
I just want to make sure that I get seats for those games.
Oh,
that's
man.
My biggest complaint, is I want to make sure I still get seats.
It will be a show for sure, because there's going to be a palpable energy around, especially if Julio comes up and just, you know, does what we expect him to do. Like, there's going to be such a buzz that we really haven't seen. I mean, we felt it a little bit with Kyle Lewis, but it was September, so it has kind of a different feeling than if it's opening day. But, like, Julio's first opening day in Seattle is definitely something I want to be in attendance for, no doubt.
Kelnick, too. I'm really excited about him.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned him.
Yeah, you see what he talks about what he wants to do in his career, and he's already talking about Hall of Fame, that nothing short of that is what he wants. And I'm looking forward to seeing a guy like that play for us. His goals, you know, I hope he's not. I don't think he's a selfish ball player. And by any means, by saying that, I just like the idea of, you know, what that takes and what he brings along to the teams that he plays with.
No, totally. This is like my favorite sort of brand of Mariners conversation to have too, because I think, and I get it, like it can be very easy for people to become beaten down by the Mariners and, you know, always think that the sky is falling. Like, I mean, we even just recently, like 2018, you know, they're playing really well and you still have that chorus of people saying this isn't sustainable, the run differential is blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you're right. Like, there's nothing factually incorrect about what you're saying. I just don't, like, why would you choose to think that way? You know what I mean? So that's why I love, like, you know, we could be totally wrong about all these guys, but why let ourselves do that? Like, why would you want to just be like, oh, you know, Julio's going to be whatever. Jared Kelenic is, you know, not as hyped up as he should, like, isn't as good as the hype, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I'd rather be so wrong about them than sit here and, you know, sort of have tempered expectations, because if anything, the 18-year playoff drought has just made me more excited for it to flip. Not the thing that a lot of people do, where it's 18 years of, you know, missing the playoffs means that I can be very nihilistic and, you know, very, oh, well, it's never gonna happen, woe is me. Like, I much prefer this sort of positive spin that you're putting on it, even though it can be very hard, and I don't fault anyone for having those thoughts, but it's just, for me personally, and it sounds like for you as well, like, positivity is really the thing that keeps us coming back.
It's baseball. It's a game. It's fun. It's supposed to be fun. And as long as I'm having fun watching it, and they're doing, I'll always come back. I just think that why come into, it could be either go south or it could head north. You never know. So that's what's great about baseball. If the gods are smiling on a pitcher a certain day, then it doesn't matter who you are, who's in the lineup.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you wouldn't have all these no-hitters by guys who've never pitched anything short, anything close to it. You still get no-hitters from these kind of guys. The gods will shine. And you never know how long they're going to shine.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's what's cool thing. That's why you have these streaks that are so unbreakable, because at one time it happened, and you never know what's going to happen again.
Absolutely. So, okay, before we get out of here, I do want to sort of take you to a little bit of a darker place. I just want to know, because I'm genuinely curious about this with everyone I talk to, was there ever a moment where you considered not supporting them as hard, or like, what was your darkest or rock bottom moment with the Seattle Mariners? Can you remember a time where you were like, you know what, this actually sucks, and like, maybe I'm having second thoughts, or maybe it was just, you know, this sucks, we'll flush it and move on? But I feel like everyone has one moment where they can think of and say, that was my lowest point as a Mariners fan. What was that for you?
I don't necessarily know if it was a play. It was, I have to say, it was the, I felt like 2018 was one of those seasons. I felt we came in the All-Star break, we were looking so good. We started teetering off there right before, the few games before there. Mm-hmm. You thought, okay, the guys just need some rest. Then Cruz comes in, he does, you know, he convinces the manager to let Gene get a hit, who was voted in by everybody that last minute. And he gets a home run. You think, oh yes, this is, we're gonna win. We're gonna win. We're gonna win. We're gonna win. This is a sign.
Yeah.
And then Diaz gets in there and lets them tie the game. And I thought that there, I thought was a dark moment, because I thought it was ominous when it happened.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was watching that game. I mean, I think that was, seeing Mariners in the All-Star game was kind of a novel concept, at least that many. Like, it had been so long.
Yeah.
And then, but for me, the All-Star game is just exhibition. Like, obviously, I was rooting for all the Mariners. But when I saw Edwin blow that save, I think my thought was, well, I'm glad he got it out of the way in a game that doesn't count. I wasn't thinking about it like you, where it's like, oh, no, this is an omen, or this is going to lead to disaster. But I mean,
you know, it is, it's gonna affect the clubhouse. He just cost him a car, a new car, and a trophy, and something that he would have got MVP of the game.
Oh, absolutely.
If that happened.
I just had never considered that angle of the All-Star game being the thing that sort of unraveled the whole.
For me, that's when I kind of know. I don't know. I tend to go, I'm more touchy feely with this sort of thing. In the playoffs, you know, I always feel like that, you know, there's certain times you see the mojo's starting to go a certain way, and you can tell. To me, it's obvious when you know that which team's going to win with the mojo, not necessarily who's hitting, but who's got that that magic that's coming in there. And it's the little tiny things that always comes back and haunt him. It's a called strike that wasn't supposed to be a called strike. It was an overthrow from a player that never does it. It's always those little tiny things that tips that balance, and it just continues to go in the other direction. There's nothing you can do to stop that. And that's why I think baseball is magic. I think that there, you know, I'm a superstitious guy when it comes to stuff like that. I do believe that there are forces at work on that diamond.
Yeah, I think to just sort of let you in on my personal life a little bit, 2018, the season that we've been talking about a lot, was my first year at Lookout Landing. So I was following the Mariners closer than I ever had in my entire life. And now it's sort of fascinating to look back and actually have sort of like a diary for some of these things, because some of the, you can see like my tone in game recaps really start to shift post All-Star break, especially in August and September. And I remember also I wrote something about how I straight up ghosted the Mariners. I stopped paying attention for a week. There was, you might remember this, last year, 2018, the Mariners are playing the Dodgers, 3-game series at Safeco, and I was thinking, oh, this is a great test, you know, a team that we've never really seen. It'll be good. Because, you know, when you play, you know, the Astros 20 times a year, you start to develop a game plan and tendencies and all that, and you know what they're going to do. With the Dodgers, I was like, okay, this is great. This is a neutral thing. We'll see how good the Mariners really are. And I think the Dodgers outscored us by, like, 20 runs in a 3-game series.
Yeah, it seems impossible.
Yeah, so after that, I was like, you know what, I cannot. I need to take a week break from the Mariners. And I wrote about doing this, and then, you know, obviously the season goes the way it does, and they don't make the playoffs. But I remember thinking, like, if this is how the Mariners are gonna do every year, I will not be able to continue writing about them. So that's why part of me was like, thank God that in 2019 they decided to, you know, get younger, become more future-oriented, and not do the classic, you know, we're going to chase 84 wins in the second wild card spot. Because it can be very trying to have a team, you know, be good, which is a crazy thing to say, I know, especially as a fan of the Seattle Mariners. But, like, you get this with the Seahawks, too. I don't know how much you follow the Seahawks, but, like, them being contenders every year has made me very stressed out in a way that I don't necessarily love. So I do appreciate, I guess is the right word. I appreciate when the Mariners are playing low stress baseball. I don't have to live and die with every pitch.
Yeah, and I don't mind that, because the live and die is makes it interesting and keeps it fun and keeps you on the edge of your seat. But after a while, so many of those games, it start to wear on you, and you know it's wearing on you as a fan. It's got to wear on the players too, that at some point that they're going to take that break mentally and need to remove themselves. And I think, like us, they don't have that luxury of just turning the TV off for a couple of days and, you know, going and checking the box scores. You still got to check the box scores. I can't turn the TV off. I just want to see, you know, just player performances, see what everybody's doing. But it's tough.
One of my biggest fears for sure is this idea that the players themselves will become soured on the idea of being a Mariner, because like if the losing continues and it becomes like, oh, the Mariners are the laughingstock of the league, like the brand itself becomes tarnished. Like, I don't want the Mariners to become the Cleveland Browns or the Knicks, you know what I mean, where it's like they're literally like people who don't follow the sport know how bad they are. That's my number one concern. So I think the Mariners, and part of this is geography, I guess, and just baseball not being as popular as it once was, the Mariners still have a little bit of like anonymity where they can sort of suffer in silence the way that the New York Knicks can't. But I am, like, my creeping fear is that we're going to be talking about the playoff drought 20 years from now and the Mariners are just going to be like a punchline. So,
oh, I hope not. I don't think so. I think we got enough guys coming up that this is going to be, I think this next season could be really fun to see. If Kyle Lewis is up there, you got Haniger healthy, Malik Smith or whoever they decide to use in center field or left, playing great and getting a chance to, because Shed Long in the outfield. I think we got some sticks, because on my mind, I'm making up the team and I'm thinking, okay, where could we fill holes? Like, if I had money, who would I put in these positions? Like, you know, I like where these guys are at right now. There's not too much I'd want to be doing to trade up to get better, because I think they already have that potential. The only places where you see it are in the bullpen and starting rotation, and we're starting to see those trades coming through.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in a rebuild, the bullpen should always come last just because the nature of bullpens are so volatile. You don't want to spend money on, you know, a reliever when your team's not going to be very good. But I completely agree with you on 2020 is going to be fun at the very least. Like, I don't think they're going to be a great team. I don't think they're even going to be very good. Like, I'm expecting an under 500 year, but it is going to be a lot of fun to see what I think will be the first iteration of these new Mariners. And I think there is something very poetic about it being 2020, like a new decade, you know, clear vision, all that. Like, that pun is not lost on me. And then also, you know, we've moved on from Felix and Cano and Nelson Cruz, and we're truly, it feels like we're truly turning a new page. And to me, that
Yeah, we are. You know, with Kyle being that, actually feels like he's that last tie to the old regime. And I like Kyle Seager, and I hope he sticks part of that as a team leader on there and bringing that stability, kind of like a Zimmerman for
Yeah, it's a good comp.
But these guys are going to be great. They're going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch them play. And I'm looking forward to that first pitch of spring training, I tell you.
Aren't we all? Well,
and I love this time of year, though. The trades, this doesn't bother me because I love watching the activity. It doesn't matter whose teams they are. It's just fun to keep track of everybody going through and checking out their numbers and seeing, okay, what does this guy, do you think, brings to the team? So when we play him, how should we be playing him?
Yeah, it is really fun. I agree with you.
Educating myself so I can make smart bets with my wife while we're playing, or while we're watching games.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you so much, Jeffrey. We're going to let you go here. Before we sign off, I want to ask if you have anything to plug, any social media you want to direct people to. The floor is yours if you want to sort of talk about yourself and your work at all.
Yeah, no, I work with comic book industry. I work with Marvel Comics, IDW Comics, Valiant Comics as a cover artist. Just be on the lookout for my books. Also, I have some new murals coming out in Seattle, downtown there. There's going to be a 120-foot mural that they'll be unveiling in April at a new hotel.
Wow.
Just looking for it. And main thing, just looking for baseball to start, looking for our Mariners to win.
Absolutely, brother. All right. Well, I am at mroberson22 on Twitter. Subscribe to this podcast if you like the stuff that we do. As always, read Lookout Landing, and just generally be happy about the Mariners. It's all we can really do. So there's no sense in beating your head against the wall all winter when you could just, you know, be sunny about it. That's my part.
Yeah, you know, it's Schroeder's cat. You don't know if it's alive or dead. Make it alive then.
Love that. All right. Well, until next time, everyone, this is the Lookout Landing Podcast. Bye.
Bye.
When you're out for me, baby, shame on you. And call me too. Baby, you're so cruel. I don't mind. Take my hand. Oh, baby, I want.